Blog Talk Radio.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And hello once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy. It's another week of American Tennis, and we are glad, folks, to be back on a regular schedule. I know it's been up and down the whole time during the spring season. That's just the way it goes with coaches, though. But I'm locked in, ready to go. And, folks, you know that this is the first summer since 1972, gosh, I'd have to do my arithmetic there, but that's a bunch of years in a row, like 47, I believe, for the first summer that I do not have a tennis camp to do, and my, I miss it, but oh my golly, could I tell some stories on this show, and oh my golly, I've seen about all of it. The toughest thing, if you do tennis camps, so sleepover camps, whoa, sending your kids to sleepover camps too, you better make sure that that person running it is there all the time and they stay in the dorms and they have great people around because, man, oh, man, that's a tough one when you're taking care of other people's children. So I've got that off of me, and I'm going to be doing a radio program plus recruiting plus freelancing plus doing a lot of different things, writing. I've got another daggone book that I'm going to be working on. And I'm excited about that. So anyhow, that's a few things coming up. But folks, this is year, gosh, after June 12, it will be year 6 completed. We will be in our 7th year already of American Tennis. And our job every week when I come to you on the Yellow Ball Network is, folks, we're all in this. Stand up, speak out, do the things you need to do, help other people around you, believe in the law of reciprocity that it will come back to you, and the law of abundance. There's enough to go around for everybody, but we need the compounding centrifugal force of many people working together to get things done. We need all of you. Stand up, speak out when things aren't wrong, right. We've got a lot of things going on in today I've got a great, great program. We've got a great program for you today. You're going to learn a whole bunch about what's going on in the world of sports and youth sports in America, and then also how that relates to the sports industry and how the marketing people have sort of come in and, I don't want to say run roughshod over everything, but you've heard me say so many times, it's always the battle between education and entertainment. So we're going to be talking about tennis as a sport, tennis as the marketing participation entity that many people look at it as. But we've got the perfect person in here today, Bobby Verdun. And Bobby, I think you're on the program right now. How you doing, man?
Great, Coach. Great to be here with you.
Great. Well, welcome. I'm glad I got you there. But Bobby Vernon, you've been a basketball coach, tennis coach, an athlete, tennis, basketball. You've coached at two different colleges over the last 30 years. You've coached men's teams, women's teams. You've been in the management industry, and you've had, I think, two or three of your own companies already. But make efficiency systems with the people and the situation you put them in to help them run well and get to a productive state. You're one of the few people out there that would understand the balance that we have to have between the educational process of a sport and also the entertainment aspect of the sport. And I'm going to cut you loose here in a second to talk about it, but I get frustrated, and I've talked a lot about it. I just absolutely hate what they're doing to some of the sports. NBA, I won't watch it anymore, even though I grew up in Indiana. Absolutely hate the way they've marketed the players, more important than the game, the bastardization of the game where it's just running. They've got to do something to bring the artistic part back in. It's more athletic than it is basketball. Baseball, they're talking about the balls being juiced now, maybe that. All these home runs, the marketing people might be juicing the ball so that they hit home runs. They think that people don't enjoy those duels between the pitcher and the batter. In tennis, they are bastardizing the game like nobody's business. And Bobby, I believe there is a deep state out there that has an agenda to try to make it shorter, so that it's more profitable for marketing people, but also, unfortunately, the gambling industry. You know, tennis is the second most gambled on sport in the world because there's so many gambling opportunities. There's 127 gambling opportunities of the 128 professional draw. If you think about that, multiplied towards the many, many tournaments, we had over 60,000 they said gambling opportunities last year alone in the sport of tennis. So they want it shorter. They want it streamlined. They don't want the same people winning all the time, Federer and Nadal and these guys. That's not good for the house. So what they're doing is they're bastardizing it because there's more payoff. So the last thing, Bobby, the reason you're here, you're one of the few people in the United States that I think is so well-versed as a coach, as an educator, but also you see the marketing side. I've got energy, vision, a leader. Bobby, I would like, if we could, to start out a few minutes and you could sort of talk about your background and where you're coming to from this. I'd like for this to be a great educational program today. Always entertaining, but a good program. So people can sort of see where we're going with American tennis. As a coach, Bobby, I love the sport. I don't want it to be an after-school activity in the high school. I don't want to see it marketed to where it looks like basketball. My gosh, Bobby, I grew up in Indiana playing Hoosier basketball. And I grew up and I got to play 1 year in college. I love basketball, but I don't even watch the daggone March Madness anymore because it's been marketed to a place we don't even recognize it. Tennis is if we do that with tennis, if we lose the artistic part of tennis, we're done. So could you give a little bit on your background, Bobby, and then I'm going to cut you loose here to sort of give your thoughts. I'll be taking notes and we'll go from there. But folks, Bobby, we're done. And Bobby, you're up in Boston now, so thanks very much for being on the program. Take it away there.
Wow, thanks, Coach. It's a real pleasure to be here with you. And I agree with so much of what you're saying. My journey began, I'm probably the worst athlete I know. I just love to compete, always have.
I played one-on-one basketball with you. No, wait a minute, man. Hey, you hung with me. And I'm an Indiana guy. You hung with me, so don't start out being so humble. Folks, this guy can play ball. The three-pointer was not in. I don't think the guy can play ball. Okay, let's go there.
No,
sorry,
I appreciate
that.
You didn't post me up. That was the other part of that agreement when we play, thank God. But I love to compete, always have, whether it's in sports or business or walking to the train station. It's just in my blood. And I found that athletics was the perfect outlet for me. If I could get it out of my system before school, I could concentrate in school all day, just enough to get me back out onto the field and go compete. And you know, I was fortunate in high school to play for some very good coaches, which allowed me to continue my journey in college, narrowed it down to tennis and basketball, two very different sports, two very different experiences. And then when I get out of school, I attempted to play tennis, quickly realized that if you're going to play at the next level, you really have had to play just tennis for a lot longer than I did, and realized that quickly and got into the next best thing, which was coaching, trying to give younger kids coming up who are far more talented than I am an opportunity at a different perspective on sports and how to play and how to approach the game. And I fell in love with coaching. I wound up coaching at Franklin Pierce College. It's now Franklin Pierce University up in New Hampshire. We had a lot of success there. I coached both men's tennis and men's basketball up there. And then I got out of coaching. I actually had some opportunities to get involved with some professional teams, the Sixers and some other teams. But, you know, when you get to that level, and you know this, Coach, it becomes work first, family second. And we were just at a point where we were starting a family, and I got out of it for a while. Got involved in what I do now, which is the business side of athletics. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot between the difference between the business side of sports, the entertainment side of sports, as you would say, and, of course, the actual playing of sports. And we were very lucky. I partnered with some very smart people, people a lot smarter than me, taught me a lot, and always tried not to be the smartest person in the room, which isn't very hard for me, but I learned such great things from people, including yourself. We spent some time in College Park together. And I got into doing some consulting. And what I like about what I do, I work primarily with independent owners of facilities. I also work with universities. Anything that's active, anything that has wellness involved with it or athletics involved with it, recreation centers, recreation places and towns. And we try to create a unique factor with each entity and give them something that people can't find anywhere else. And I think that's the beauty of what I do, because every place is different. I work with tennis clubs. I work with a gentleman that's trying to build a facility shaped as a triangle, believe it or not, as a pyramid. And I think he's actually going to do it. I'm working with a number of gyms, a number of recreation centers. And as much as they are different, there's a lot of similarities involved with them as well. And then about 2.5 years ago, I live up here near Salem State University, and I got involved with the men's basketball team there. They asked if I would come in and be an assistant with the team, and I had a great time, met some great kids, such a great institution. And last year, I was asked to take over the women's program, so I started coaching women for the first time. What a great experience, just a completely different experience altogether. I think it's made me a better person and a better coach, and very exciting things going on there. And in the spring, I was asked to help out with the men's tennis team. So I'm seeing men's tennis at the Division III level, a very good team, great bunch of kids, have a chance to get to the NCAAs this year. And just to be involved with that and to be able to contribute anywhere I can is rewarding. And that's where we're at.
Well, D3 for sure. I might be the most pure form of tennis out there, and very quickly why it has not been diluted, polluted, nor prostituted. We have great experiences playing against D3 teams. You have kids American-made usually. They come to college. A lot of them, most of them pay their own way. Some of them get academic scholarships. The coaches are doing things as we did for many years for the educational part of it. Now, they want to win, and there's some darn good players, but it is not a prefabricated hokey-pokey deal that we have done in D1 with the abbreviated scoring, stopping matches before they're completed, and all of those things, the no-ad, the try to get it over with, hey, how many people are we putting in the stands? And it's a very, very good atmosphere, folks. So, Bobby, I agree with you there. Do you have anything real quick you could say about D3, why it's something that parents should look to? Or, you know, I'm thinking, you know, really it might be the most pure thing out there right now in college tennis.
Yeah, I will tell you, Coach, it's an absolute blessing to be part of where I'm at. You know, for years I had the magic potion in my hand, the scholarship, right? You'd walk in and, you know, that's what they're looking for. And it became a bidding war a lot of times for kids, which I was never comfortable with because it really took away from the ultimate reason why we do what we do. At this level, you don't have that magic wand. You go in and you sell the program, you sell the experience, and most importantly, you sell the culture of what you're doing. And that's what these kids come for. You know, I think we've spoken before, the education of a student athlete goes beyond what happens in the classroom. You know, it's what happens outside the classroom, not just
absolutely
on the athletic field, but in the dorms. And I just can't say enough about what I'm getting as a coach at Salem, but also what I'm seeing these kids graduate with and the substance that they get from the beginning through what they're going through is as rewarding to me as I hopefully am being able to share with them.
You know, Bobby, I couldn't agree with you more. The culture of it is right. It's something that people can aspire to. I just want to tell parents out there, you're going through the thing now with your youngster playing junior tennis. You're saying, look, I'm spending thousands of dollars, and all I hear is that all the international players are getting all the scholarships. Like, for example, Bobby, we're like at 70% of the scholarship money now is going to international students, and no one has anything against international students, but I don't think it was cut out to be 70% of our scholarship money. And so parents are saying, what the heck, should I really be in tennis? And last week we had Coach Randy Blumenthal on the program, Coach Dave Fosnod, and they were talking about parents complaining about the exorbitant cost of going in hotels are being booked in these communities. They're big deals to sell hotel rooms. And the USTA stretches out 3 nights in the hotel. They play no ad scoring. They don't play matches. It's just they abbreviate everything, and the kids are not getting the reps that they need that are going to take them down the line anyway. So I agree with you with D3 tennis. But let me ask you this question as we go. Okay, let me give you some statistics here. All right. In the sport of, let's see where we're falling back here. In the sport of tennis, we have not had a champion at U.S. Open at the men's side since 2002. Now, that's 17 years times 4 Grand Slams. That's 60. Is that correct? 68. 68 tries, no USA champion. All right. Now, of course, we have Isner, Stevie Johnson, and a couple other players that are doing well. Now, in the mid-80s, we had up to 41 American-made players, American-born, and American players that went to college and were in the top 100. And for whatever, we'll see how it pans out. You know, Ohio State, that guy up there is doing a pretty darn good job at training USA players. He works those kids hard. Ty Tucker, I'm going to throw a compliment out there. But he's got a player, his number one player, looks like he might be the real deal. and I'm not supposed to talk college names here, I guess, on this program, but the bottom line, he's doing a really good job training the guy, Josh Goffey, at the University of South Carolina. Can't say enough about him. He's one of the, my former guys at Clemson. He's doing a wonderful job training. I think I love the job Brian coach down in Florida is doing. Excuse me. Brian is just such a good man, such a good coach, and people, golly, the women coach at Vanderbilt, you know, Jeff, he's doing such a great job, and there's a lot of good coaches out there that are still training players and doing a good job for American tennis, but the fact is we haven't had any champions in a long time. Now, I have always argued that the reason tennis fades and is in and out is that we have always marketed, maybe rightfully say it, maybe wrongfully, so we've marketed the athletes instead of the event. You know, when Tiger Woods dropped out the first time and he wasn't doing well, Jordan Spieth and you know, Daniel Berger and all these players that got good watching Tiger Woods, they just picked up the game. But in tennis, we really do need some Americans that pop up there. So we have no champions. The statistic on something that really bothers me, Bobby, is that we have 400,000 high school players that are signed up to play high school tennis, which should be the breeding ground, the training ground, the avenue, the springboard to being very, very good in every other sport. But in tennis, out of those 400,000, only 26,000 play tournaments. That's 7%. 7 out of 100 play tournaments. Hmm. And as far as old people, they used to play tennis. Now they play this pickleball thing, which to me is sacrilege. The day I ever go on. And the point is we have not done a good job at understanding why the old people have gravitated to that. The USTA is jumping on trying to get some pickleball stuff going. You know, they'll try to go at it the wrong way, but our sport, the symmetry was messed up with the technology. They just need to understand that. They had wood rackets and old rackets for old people that still be playing, but it's just too fast with the high-tech rackets. We have nothing for players 20 to 35, Bobby, nothing. After they play college, they're dead on the vine. There's nothing there. Junior tennis. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Navigating through junior tennis, I'd have an easier time on the Internet, and I don't know the Internet that well, you know, booking a trip to Timbuktu using 10 different airlines and to sign up for a local tournament. Now, I do not – parents ask me, what's this, what's that? I say, I don't know the difference between L2, L3, L1, blue group, red group. And the USTA has taken all the personality and passion out of there. Small town USA, we've dropped the ball. And so the point being with all that, there's a corrosion, right? There's a corrosion in that. Could you talk a little bit about that? I've got a few ideas that I'd like to run by you, but could you talk about the phenomena, about what you've seen about the sport of tennis versus the maybe the activity of tennis and why people and marketing people have gotten that messed up? That's a long question.
Yeah.
But
no, it's. I think it starts with relevancy. You know, when you talk about pulling the game back to create advertising opportunities, making the game shorter. I mean, is there anything more exciting than watching a college tennis match come down to the final match with both teams there? It makes tennis a team sport, and I would suggest that that's what, you know, they've tried to do with some of the stuff professionally, but it's just pure excitement. There's nothing better to watch, and it pulls people all around the court. And when you cut the game short, when you go to tiebreakers, it's over in a matter of seconds, and then it's over. And there's no historical data.
Sorry for jumping in there, but the drama is different than excitement. Drama is what you're talking about, the building intrigue of like the eighth, ninth inning of a tight baseball game is what they're cutting out. Is that correct?
Yeah, it would be the equivalent of, you know, okay, a team's up by 20 in the first half. Let's make the second half 10 minutes instead of 20 minutes. When you don't get to watch the team fight back and throughout that whole second half. And I think that's a real disappointment. But I think it comes down to, in my position, not as a coach but as a consultant, I can't tell you how many towns I go through where I see courts, public courts, that 20 years ago were filled, are not only empty, but there's grass, there's cracks, nobody's fixing them up. We don't have Pied Pipers at the grassroots program anymore that's exciting kids and really energizing them about the game of tennis. I'm lucky. I have a guy that I work with in Michigan. They're close to building a great facility there, a nonprofit organization called West Michigan Community Tennis. What a great bunch of people. But they've got this young pro. His name is Mickey Miskell, and he is a pure Pied Piper. This kid will go from court to court to court and just get kids excited about tennis. And his only ambition is to grow the game. And I feel like we just don't have enough of those people anymore. A lot of guys are looking to get that kid that they can sit in the stands at the U.S. Open and watch him win the U.S. Open. Well, hasn't done a lot of good because we haven't had anybody in that position in 17 years. So I just don't see enough Pied Pipers.
Right. I want to go off of the Pied Piper thing. The program, I named it today. They always ask me to put a name up when I, you know, plan a program. I got paralysis by analysis and micromanagement won't work. I put, as the sports world has become more easily organized by computers and managers instead of leaders, running the show, micromanagement is the new normal. Sophisticated systems will never inspire. But freedom and incentives will inspire and do inspire. Could you talk, I've voiced it a lot of times, but centralized government, I would use the example of our educational system in the United States right now, how they are trying to micromanage from Washington, D.C. to local school systems in Boise, Idaho, or in Timbuktu, Indiana, where I grew up, or, you know, the point is that whenever central government or someone in the center, the USTA, ITA, whenever you put, I get turned off right away. I don't want to go on a tangent here myself, but the red, orange, green, I've used pressureless balls for training, for overload training, to neutralize, to make the symmetry on the court better since 1989 or 90 when I figured out the high-tech rackets were screwing up the rally tolerance. Well, I've used it for all that time, but when they came out and said red, orange, green must be used and you must play these tournaments in order to advance because we, the USTA, knows. Oh, wait a minute, I've coached 40-some years. Are you kidding me? And an ITF guy who's wonderful, wonderful man with the ITF said to me, Chuck, and the guy was from Europe, he goes, Chuck, sounds to me like the only reason you don't like this is because you're being forced to use it. I go, I'm an American. Don't tell me to take the hill. Don't tell me how to take the hill. You want to kill my incentive? Mike, try to micromanage me. You micromanage me, and I will buck you like a wild horse. And I only... Defiance comes before compliance with all strong people and all leaders. And so, Bobby, the Pied Pipers, I'd like for you to go off here and talk about this. How do you believe we're negating like this kid? Okay, so what will happen, this young man in Michigan, is they'll find out, hey, he's doing good. Is he doing our red, orange, green pro? Oh, by the way, is he following USTA specs? Oh, by the way. Do all of his courts have those silly lines? Oh, by the way, is he paying, Bobby, a tournament tax on all the kids to the USTA? Oh, by the way, does that sound like socialism or communism, communist tennis? I mean, you want to kill incentive?
I think what it does is it takes away one of the most important things, Chuck, and it's creativity. you know. And you look back at athletics throughout the years, some of the greatest players of all time were the most creative. Larry Bird, I mean, 6'9" guy that changed the game in his own way, as an example. John McEnroe changed the game with his creativity with his racket. But when these guys go on the courts with young kids and they look at a notebook of how to do it instead of using their gut, using, you know, each kid, in my opinion, I don't know, I'm sure you can say this as well, every kid I've coached learns differently than the next one. And if you just go on strictly, this is how we're going to do it for everybody, you're going to lose a lot of kids. And that's what I've seen.
Bobby, in the state of South Carolina today, as we speak, there is a teacher walkout, and a lot of teachers have walked away from the classroom. Now, it's not getting much publicity because people don't want to talk. They don't want the big news coming out, but basically teachers, of course, they need to be paid more. Of course, they want more sick days or something, but the biggest thing is that all teachers out there, if you're a teacher, you know that you are being forced to do the company line, and they're forced to do testing nearly every day. And guess what? Centralized Big Brother government is forcing this down their throat. This No Child Left Behind was the biggest bunch of crap, you know, that ever was. Government top-down management telling people what to tell people. Incentives is what people want. An American wants to say, take that hill and let's have a race to do it. And by the way, figure out what not your pathway, but you have a free way, a freedom to go get it. Freedom to go get it. So two questions. What's the answer? I got to go to commercial here in a second, but I want you to think here a second. Let me just go to a quick commercial, Bobby. And then I want to ask you the question. We've got to solve the problem. We want to name it, then claim it, and then tame it. We do not want to name it, claim it, and then blame it. It's easy to blame. Unfortunately, a lot of people name it, blame it, then rearrange it. You know, and but anyhow, I will be back in about 30, 45 seconds with Coach Bobby Verdun, and we will be right back with American Tennis. And it's Coach Chuck Creasy. And folks, my book, Coaching Tennis, has been on the market for nearly 20 years, but it's one of the best-selling and the highest-selling books around the world for coaching your youngster, your player, in not just the sport of tennis, but many sports. It takes on the physical, the mental, and the emotional parts of the game. You can get this book by going to Amazon. It's Coaching Tennis, McGraw-Hill book out there. And folks, it's been out for 20 years, and it will be out for another 20 years. So go get my book now, Coaching Tennis, and I'm Coach Chuck Creasy. Go to www.chuckcreasy.net. Making them in America here, and we want to make them at every level in the sport of tennis, the greatest sport, the greatest game ever developed, 145 years. It will be around a long time after we are gone. But, folks, we cannot have it cheapened, diluted, polluted, prostituted. We have Mr. Bobby Verdun, Coach Bobby Verdun. Bobby Verdun, one of the best. I love being around you. I love talking to you. The energy, and I brainstorm forever after you put a few things out there. I'd like for you to talk a little bit now, if you could, about some of the solutions. How do we create the Pied Pipers? What do we do? How do we make the differentiation between participation tennis and, just if you were in charge, let's give us some solutions, Bobby.
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is we have to acknowledge the fact that whenever they put out these statistics that the game is growing, I would respectfully disagree. I think what you have is a number of kids that are forced to put a tennis racket in their hand, but you don't see the number of kids picking up a racket on their own after they have to go through the red ball, green ball, whatever balls it is. The first thing that needs to happen is local pros need to understand that tennis is a game that's very intricate, but it also can be a heck of a lot of fun. And I think that instructors, I mean, Coach, I've sat on the sidelines for hours and watched you coach, and we all know you're as intense as anybody, but your kids, they love playing. They love playing for you. They love playing and learning and getting better. And you know what? Part of that process is not winning. Sometimes kids have to lose to appreciate winning. And I find when you're given trophies all over the place for showing up, it takes away credibility in a lot of ways with kids. And I just think coaches need to have a forum where they can go out and a kid, not all the kids are going to win every day. That's okay. And not all the kids are going to want to play a certain way. That's okay, too. As long as you wind up getting to the spot you want to get to, I think the coaches have to become creative and they have to utilize resources beyond what they're being taught how to coach the game. The best thing I've seen in a long time, Coach, was about 2 weeks ago. There was a rainy day, and I ran into a gym. I was outside, and there was this guy teaching tennis in a lobby of a school. The gym was being used. The auditorium was being used. He set up a bunch of chairs as nets, and these six-year-old kids were having the time of their life. That's what I'm talking about, being creative, bringing energy, which I think is the most important part of developing a program. It's the most powerful because energy can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing. And he turned a negative into such a positive. I know all those kids that were playing that day, they didn't want to leave. So that's where it starts for me. You got to let coaches be creative and let kids fail so they can appreciate winning.
Bobby, I took down eight things you just said from the substance there. And number one was acknowledge the shortcomings where we're at in USA Tennis. I hate that they keep propping up these programs. For example, the Red, Orange, Green, they're never going to say it's a big flop of a failure. They invested millions of dollars into marketing that, selling those Red, Orange, Green balls, forcing kids to use it. You know, last year we had that as statistic, only 41 kids in the whole state, the state of South Carolina. I'm not just talking about a square block or something or a city. The state signed up for green ball tennis in the state of South Carolina. I mean, it's a bomb. It's awful. Now, they marketed all that, and then Bobby, on the other hand, the universal scoring system or the universal tennis rating, the UTR, was created by a guy named Dave Howe and Daryl Cummins up there in Virginia Beach area. Now, those guys on their own created this and marketed this. USTA didn't want any part of it starting out, but because the idea was it was a free thing, it was out of the box, it's taken off, and now it's going to be all over the world. They sold it to some group, but the universal tennis rating was not marketed by the USTA. And I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but we had a meeting recently, USTA meeting in Hilton Head. There was USTA representative there, and they outright said, when you get a great idea, let's market it and make it work. I said, no, wait a minute. You know how they like me. You know, I go, wait, no, if you have an idea, you work it and make it successful, then you market it. But nobody wants to buy Tang because the astronauts apparently drank it. That's a quip
yeah.
from when I was a child. You remember Tang, Bobby?
Yeah.
Remember Tang?
Oh, yeah.
Astronauts drink Tang. And
yeah.
it was Kool-Aid in a jar, Kool-Aid powder out of a jar. But the bottom line on the thing, they said astronauts drink it. Well, hey, red, orange, green, we've got all these great players who do it. No, they don't. By the way,
none
of the champions do it. Nobody wants to shoot. This is the analogy basketball. Nobody wants to shoot at an 8-foot basket with a 10-foot basket there. If my youngster, who is 8 years old, say, and there's a basketball, a 10-foot and an 8-foot, he can make 8-foot baskets pretty easily, can't barely get it up there to the 10-foot. Which one does he want to shoot there, Coach Verdun?
Oh, of course. I mean, yeah, absolutely. You're right on the money.
And they don't want to do kiddie tennis. Kids don't want to do kiddie tennis. So the bottom line, let's acknowledge the shortcomings, USTA, and let's go after the sleeping giants, which is high school tennis, and figure out what we're doing there to cut that. Hey, Small Town Tennis USA, do you know, Bobby, that over 73% of all professional athletes come from towns under 50,000 people? I've got a program called Small Town Tennis USA. If you are a small town coach and or a small town lover of tennis, please call me or email me at chuckcreasy@gmail.com. Chuck Creasy, K-R-I-E-S-E, @gmail.com. And I'll get back to you, but I'll tell you about how to create Small Town Tennis USA programs. But, Bobby, the other part is the red, orange, green, it burns people out. When you make restrictions on people, why aren't our children motivated in the classroom? Well, they take the they study to the test. They're not motivated for learning. Orange, green burns people out. We need freelance fun. Kids have fun. They have to have the freedom. Win, lose, learn. But and no participation trophies. I've got more, but I would like for you to jump in there. We've got about 10, 15 minutes left. I sure don't want to miss out on stuff. So how do we create a non-bureaucracy in tennis? How do we get people to go out and strike out on their own way? USTA does not like me telling people this, but break out of the pack, get out of the box, people. The USTA is not – they'll be there to help you be mediocre. But if you want excellence and you want a lot of great kids playing, it ain't through systems. It's incentives. So what are your thoughts, Bobby?
Yeah, you know, I think it goes back to what you said earlier. We haven't had a champion in 17 years. We haven't come close in 17 years. You know, it's almost like last year – if I think Isner made it to the round of 16 at one of the tournaments, might have been the U.S. Open, and it was, you walk in to see friends and they say, hey, we actually have an American that's still playing on the third day of the tournament. So it starts, in my opinion, when one of these young guys, like the kid I talked about in Michigan, when they start getting better results and they start beating kids that are just going through the 10-2 way of doing things, people will jump off and follow it. I think that's what's needed right now. These kids need to, that are growing up with Pied Piper coaches that aren't afraid to go a different way, and they start getting results, I think you're going to see other people go and do it that way, and they'll start the trend. Until that happens, until coaches are brave enough to break away and do that, and part of that is believing in yourself as a coach. One of the things that I take pride in is I love scouting reports, but at the end of the day, I want my kids to be able to play in a certain way and play the game a certain way that it doesn't matter what you're throwing at us, that our kids are prepared enough to battle you. I just think you have to look at things and add more color than black and white. And that's what I'm seeing with tennis right now. And that's why, in my opinion, it's becoming irrelevant. And it really is, from a business standpoint to an entertainment standpoint. You can tell me all day long, oh, you know, tennis has grown tens of thousands of kids since 2012. Well, the reality is that over 50% of players playing consistently today are over the age of 45. They're not under the age of 18. That's a problem.
Hey, Bobby, I don't want to get sidetracked here a little bit, but am I right about basketball? You're a basketball coach now, but tell me about basketball in your opinion. Am I right there? I'm off the mark. Are they messing up that game?
You know, it's unfortunate. The game started to change when guys like Michael Jordan came in and were so talented, they changed the game the way it's played. You know, now you have the big guys. You don't see many players anymore with their backs to the basket. They just made a rule change for next year for our division where the three-point line is going to go out another inch and a half, or I think it's an inch and a third. But they're not going to change the width of the key, specifically because they don't want to completely take away the use of a big man, a traditional big man. So now what I see is my turn shots. Kids come down and they don't shoot the ball after two or three times. I saw this with the Celtics last night. A kid named Tatum was taking a my turn shot because he hadn't shot the ball in two or three possessions. It's not about we, it's about me. And it's something that's very prevalent, in my opinion, in the game, and it's what's turning off people from watching the NBA, and even top college teams battle this very much so.
You know, I remember the best era, of course, was the Celtics, Lakers of the 80s. But it was the passing. You know, Larry Bird was a great scorer, but you would see him score maybe thought 18 and he would have 33, but he had 8-9 assists. The passing, the teamwork, the balance, the chemistry they had was just amazing. But again,
it's
very disappointing.
It was such an efficient game, Coach. The scores of the games were so high. I mean, you used to see on a nightly basis 130 points scored a game, 120 points scored a game. And now the game, you come down and each possession isn't appreciated. And what happens is you have more turnovers, become sloppy. It's a different game. And it's just not as efficient as it once was, for sure.
I've often used the analogy of basketball, tennis. Okay, tennis is the only sport, and I argue why no ad is so bad. On game point, if you're at 4-4, and if you win that point through hook, crook, or net court, or luck, you will have an 8-point swing. You will only need 4 points. The other person now needs 12. Every game that is goes to 3-all or deuce is an 8-point swing because we have the only sport where game point, okay, any point we play, if you lose the point, I win the point. So it's a 2-point swing. On game point, it's an 8-point swing. That's why it screws up the game so much to play no ad scoring. But think basketball as a basketball coach. Now, Bobby, let's say, and I'm going to give you an idea here to work when you coach your girls next year, all right? All right? Every time a team shoots and misses, the other team gets 2 points. That's what tennis is. Do you think shot selection would be a little bit better?
Oh, absolutely, Coach. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Think about that.
Do you find that when you watch what they're doing with the game and they go into these tiebreakers, do you find that kids play not to lose more than to win? Because that's what I see.
Parents, if you've got a daughter out there, if you play no ad scoring, your daughter will turn into a pusher and she'll choke by moving back into court and pushing on game point.
Yeah.
That's their best. Men step up and they check out. They play slap shot tennis. but both are wrong on game point, but everyone knows it's an 8-point swing. Bobby, the cheating is unbelievable on game point because there is a too big of an advantage to winning game point. It's an 8-point swing. So you win 6-0, well, guess what? If you had not won those three deuce points, the score's 3-3. It's an 8-point swing. It's difference, and no one understands that it's, you know, so basketball, could you imagine in soccer, every time you take a shot on the goal, if you miss, the other team got one goal. Your shot making would be a little different. Well, in the NBA, people throw shots away. In tennis, it makes the women push. It makes the men check out. The men check out. I want to bring something up to you here before we run out of time. So centralized government is my big problem here. You know, I've brought out that paralysis by analysis with the age of computers, I've often said that we've allowed Barney to run Mayberry. In other words, Barney is the number two guy in charge. Andy was the number one guy in charge. I have a audio that I've been trying to get help putting it up. Every time I hear something about micromanagement, I was going to play the citizen's arrest, citizen's arrest, citizen's arrest from
Barney.
Barney Fife. But Barney,
I remember that.
And I'm going to play that. And then the other part I'm going to play, I'm trying to throw these thing in there, is what we're looking for is Braveheart, where he goes, freedom, freedom, and from Braveheart. And in tennis, we need freedom, and we do not need micromanagement. Micromanagement.
Right.
All right. I got one more question here I'd like for you to go into, and if we could get that. Okay, so you're a young guy or young gal in college. I want you to talk about, because I've run into this with my last two assistant coaches. My last assistant coach told me, Coach, some of the worst people I know are very successful in business or something, and they can work it and they get paid for their problems. Some of the best and most competent people I know are getting hammered in the sport of tennis and coaching. And so why should I go into coaching? So could you talk about that a little bit? Those that still have a heart to give and a heart to teach and things, we need people, we need these Pied Pipers. Could you talk about that, Bobby, and you know, your journey too?
There's nothing more rewarding to me. Now I can talk three-dimensionally now because I'm a father of a 17-year-old young lady and a 14-year-old son. And there's nothing more rewarding than seeing your players or your kids go further than you were able to do and being a part of that journey. And when you coach or whether you consult, I always say to people, you know, there's nothing better I'd rather experience than a kid overachieving and getting that feeling of success because of all the work and the trust that he put in, and you were part of that. And you can't always judge your coaching experiences. It's a long journey, and you and I know we've experienced great seasons, we've experienced challenging seasons, but there's, in my opinion, when you're there and you're part of it, as opposed to sitting on the other side of the court and watching it, I've gotten tenfold more of watching my kids play. I had a great bunch this year, as I said, of women who literally coach. They didn't have a bad practice all year. And this is the first year of a rebuilding season, and all of these kids came in every day, took charges during practice, stayed late, showed up early. To me, that's the basis of what we're going to be going forward. And now you add skill to that, and you get the thrill. And there's nothing more thrilling than being part of a championship season where you know you've been a part of the journey, guiding and coaching and taking kids further than I could go.
I'd add a little bit, you know, after 60, it's really interesting what starts to happen, but you realize that as you get older, first of all, time is the most important thing, but you realize, you know, I've been to a lot of funerals lately, but, you know, as I'm getting older, and this happens, but I realize the only thing you leave really is what you leave with other people, number one, and then taking care of your family, getting educations, and trying to set your family up as best you can before the good Lord takes you is critical. And if you don't, if you're still chasing, you're 55, you're 60 years old, and you're still chasing the same things you did when you're 25, 30, 35, boy, you better get it together, because you're going to end up looking like a burnout rock star. You know, you're going to be chasing stuff that it really looks foolish. Years ago, I heard about the law of reciprocity is number one, and the law of abundance. The law of reciprocity says that whatever you give away to other people, you will get back tenfold, either financially or in rewarded in many, many ways. And those of you who are interested in helping other kids or teachers, we need you in the sports. The law of reciprocity is absolute truth. That's what you're talking about. The other thing, the law of abundance, look, there's enough stuff out there to go around for everybody. You know, so don't try to hoard the good things that happen, and help each other, help people, even in the sport of tennis. The hardest thing, Bobby, is when a youngster wins or something, you know, people get jealous of them, you know, and that's, I guess, human nature, you know, human nature. Yeah. But though that's what you're talking about, you know, the reciprocities, aren't you? I mean, the law of reciprocities. I mean, that's, you know, and no matter how you can that, without being able to give away what you've gotten, it doesn't make much sense, does it?
No, not at all. And, you know, I'll finish with what I started with. I was never the best athlete in the room or the smartest person in the room. But what I got out of competing at some of the highest levels, I just feel an urgency to give back. And I'll tell you, I've been very lucky to be a part of championships and national championships and whatnot. There's nothing more rewarding in my, maybe it's this stage in life, but to see kids that look in their eyes when they finally figure it out, they finally get it, and they look at you, it's just a great feeling. And I appreciate every day I can be a part of it. It's really a gift.
So, Bobby, how long, I hate that. I'm going to ask how old you are. Have you got another 10 years in you to keep coaching and to keep pushing youngsters?
I don't know, you know,
find their own greatness.
I'm 53, going on 21, I think my wife would tell you. But I take it year by year. My goal when I started the coaching journey again on the field was to build back a program and make it something that's very relevant in the school. And I think we're well on our way to doing that. And also mentoring young coaches. I've got two phenomenal assistant coaches that are going to be better head coaches than I am, I'll be honest with you. And so, you know, it feels good to be there right now, and it fits into what I do as a consultant. But we just take it year by year and hope you have health and happiness and never forget about family time. And as long as it fits, I'll continue to do it.
Bobby, it couldn't be said any better. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show today. And let's do it again soon. I want to get up there sometime in the winter and watch you coach basketball. I want to see you on the bench on the sideline there, you know, working.
Well,
thank you.
I had a full afro before the start of last season, Coach. Now, if you look at pictures, I got nothing up there. But I would love to have you sitting next to me, I'll tell you. You ever want to come out of retirement and coach a little basketball, there's always a place for you.
That's one of my dreams, to coach basketball. High school basketball in Indiana was my dream. And, you know, that's not the way the good Lord took me, but daggone it. That was exciting stuff and a big part of it. Well, I've listened, Bobby Verdun. Thank you very, very much. I surely appreciate you being on the program today, and thanks, and come back on again, okay?
Thank you so much, Coach. I appreciate it.
All right. God bless you.
Made in America. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's just made in America.
Reminding you, you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or loss. Go out and help that youngster right in front of you. God bless you, and see you next week on American Tennis.